Blog Talk Radio.
Today's sponsor of Southern Sense is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken, audible entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Southern Sense.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Welcome to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, Pundit Press, Kinetic Hi-Fi, The Fix FM, Radio Patriot Network, TeaPartyCommunity.com, Ghost Fighter Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher, and all said in one breath. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, and I have back from his little bit of vacation, Dan the Butcher, and my other co-host, Kel. Good afternoon, Dan and Kel.
Hello, Annie, and welcome back, Dan. Dan the man.
Hey. Thank you, everybody. Yes, my early demise was greatly exaggerated. I am back and better than ever.
Well, I want to welcome everyone that's listening in here in the chat room and online as well. We've got ourselves a fantastic guest, and I think he just got dropped. Do you know, whenever we have Trevor Loudon on, we always have a problem with him calling in.
What is it with Tuesday afternoons, guys? What is it with Tuesday afternoons? But you know what? It's now Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. Tim and I, we were hell on wheels at RFB Radio WOW yesterday. It was so overwhelming. I barely get through the show. Tim had to carry me. Thank goodness I had the greatest co-host on the planet.
It's a conspiracy, man. It's a conspiracy. Welcome to the BTR Twilight Zone.
And if it's Tuesday, and if our guest is Trevor Loudon, you know we're going to have phone problems. So let's bring him in before he gets dropped again.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Trevor.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Hello, Mr. Loudon. It's an honor to speak with you.
Oh, it's great to be on, Anne. Thanks too much.
We know it started off with the right foot. When I saw, as soon as I saw your call come in, I was getting ready to click on your microphone to bring you on. I see you drop it. I said, it's Trevor and it's Tuesday. It has to be. Well, at least you're calling from stateside rather than from down under. So you're here in the United States on a book tour, and you're out to promote and raise funds for your movie coming off the book, The Enemies Within.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I accidentally almost dropped this on my foot last night, and I'm glad it missed by half an inch. But it is a great read.
It's quite a tome, isn't it?
It is. I mean, just shy of 800 pages, and I dare anyone to sit down in one sitting and read this. Actually, I keep it on the shelf right now as reference, because when someone throws a politician's name at me, I automatically now go to the book, look at that state, and see, you know, how you have them listed in the book, or whether or not they're listed in the book, which is most important. If they're not in the book, then maybe you got someone good. But don't throw
away
eggs.
Well, that's not necessarily, but yes.
Absolutely. How is the book tour going?
Look, it's good. I've only just started. I'm only a week into it, so I've done a lot of Oregon, a lot of Western Oregon, and just up in Washington State now, and lovely Walla Walla, I have to say. Beautiful town.
Never been there. And people, if they want to look at the book, I'm putting it up in the chat room. It is on the show page, but I'm putting it back up in the chat room. It's theenemieswithin.us. And I understand you're trying now to raise funds to make this into a movie.
Yeah, look, we want to do a full-length feature documentary for release next year into the theaters and DVD, et cetera. And there's a very good filmmaker involved in the project. We're looking to raise $400,000, which is pretty modest by Hollywood standards. We want to get about $300,000 through investors and $100,000 through crowdsourcing, which we're going to start to do in September.
All right, you've got it up on Indiegogo, Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, yes. So we're going to be on that. For people, they can follow my blog, trevorlowden.com, and we'll be starting that Indiegogo crowdsourcing thing in early September.
And I'm putting that up also in the chat room, trevorlowden.com. And your blog is called
Great.
The New Zeal. So even if they don't remember it, they can just type in the New Zeal blog and it'll pop up on Google.
Yep.
And it's a great blog that you keep. It is an absolutely great blog. Now, you wrote this book originally, that was back in 2001, 2002, right?
No, it came out in 2013.
Not this edition, but the one previous to it.
No, this has only been one edition.
All right. So you just
This is the first edition.
Okay. For some reason, I thought there was
I'm going to update it every electoral cycle, every two-year cycle. But this is the first one.
All right. So I got a little bath backwards, as our friend Mike Cutler always says. Now, you're from Australia. You're from down under. And
New Zealand.
I stand corrected. But what made you want to write this book about the United States? What is it that,
if you look at the world right now, you can see there's major problems breaking out in the Middle East, in Russia, with the Ukraine. China's building a big blue water navy in the Pacific. So what you've got is as America appears weaker and weaker on the world stage, the bad guys are getting bolder and bolder. So what I'm saying is that if America goes down, the whole Western world will crumble. The whole Western world will fall. So basically, I want to alert Americans to the internal subversion in their own country. The fact that at least 100 of their leading congressmen and 20 of their senators are basically working for the Marxist movement. And they are intent on bringing America down. And if you go down, we go down too.
Now, you said that in the beginning of the book that you have a certain love for America that the newer generations are not appreciating. Why is that?
Well, I grew up in a time when we still remembered very vividly my parents telling me about how they were saved in World War II from invasion by the Japanese, by the huge sacrifice of your fathers and uncles and grandfathers at the battles of Guadalcanal and the Coral Sea and Midway. We understood that our country would have been destroyed without you. And so that's a strong memory still in my country now.
Unfortunately, it's not that throughout the rest of the world. And all of a sudden,
can you come and pick me up at 11:45?
Tell Regina we said hi.
Yeah, well, it's still strong in a lot of places in Europe, but the younger generation have been indoctrinated in anti-Americanism all around the world, and they have lost sight of what America has achieved for the planet.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about the anti-nuclear movement that hit Australia in the 1980s, and I seem to remember that flowing through the United States at the end of the 70s. They had the album We Are the World. They had the anti-nuclear rally. I remember all that coming through, you know, on the heels of the fall of Saigon and Vietnam. It hit us first, but then it seemed to just go out to the rest of the world. So that liberal, God bless you, that liberal progressive movement, for me, it seemed like it started in the United States, but it really didn't, did it?
Well, no, it started in the Soviet Union. You know, the peace movement as we know it was always directed by the Soviets, still is directed by the Russians to a large degree, but now the Cubans and the Chinese are involved, etc. The Soviets set up the World Peace Council in 1949, I think it was. That was their major international front, and they used that to fund and direct peace movements in every country of the world. See, in 1984, we elected a socialist Labour government, and one of the very first things they did was to ban nuclear warships from our harbours. Now, I interviewed a New Zealander who infiltrated our local Communist Party around that time. In 1983, he was sent to Moscow to train at the Lenin School. 6,000 students were there, and that's where those New Zealand comrades were indoctrinated into how to get New Zealand to go anti-nuclear. They came up with a plan in Moscow. So the plan was based on the fact that there was massive anti-nuclear marches in Europe. The Soviets were directing the European peace movement to try and destroy NATO. And they knew if they could take out NATO, they would rule the planet. So the plan was to take New Zealand out of the Western Alliance and use the political and psychological impact of that to spur on the destruction of NATO. So these New Zealanders were basically taught how to take Moscow's plan back to New Zealand, and by using the labor movement, which the communists controlled, the peace movement, which the communists controlled, and the Labor Party, which the Communist Party had infiltrated, to turn Moscow's policy into the law of the land in New Zealand. We did that at Moscow's direction, and hardly one New Zealander in 4 million people has any understanding of that. They basically conned a whole country.
And now we're seeing the very same thing here happening in the United States. You know, the infiltration of the AFL-CIO, the SEIU, and how it's going throughout our entire government. Now, your book primarily, you know, concentrates on members of Congress. But when you start looking around to the rest of the nation, of the White House in itself, it's not just in Congress. It's been spread throughout. And you list a lot of organizations with innocuous names, and then all of a sudden you start linking them all the way back to communist parties, and how now even in Washington in itself, there is a communist school of thought, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a place called the Institute for Policy Studies, which is the leading radical think tank in the country. It's the ideas factory of the Obama administration. Now, they have always collaborated with the communists, always worked with them. They used to work with the KGB. Now they work with the Cubans. But that school has had huge influence on the U.S. Congress. They have through the Institute for Policy Studies, they've been able to bring their ideas onto the floor of your Congress. They've been able to get their people into the executive branch. Like both Barack Obama and Van Jones, the communist green jobs are, for instance, members of one of the Institute for Policy Studies' main spin-off groups, DEMOS. They were picked out very early, put on a board, you know, when they're still young radicals, trained up, and now one of them's president of the United States, and the other one was a czar, one of the key people in the government, until he was exposed as a communist and kicked out at Glenn Beck's instigation. So, yeah, you have these organizations all over the state, but the Institute for Policy Studies is certainly one of the most dangerous.
Yeah, I do have
Andy,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan. I seem to be having a problem on my end with my internet connection. I keep on getting some sort of a static coming in on the line. I apologize.
Okay. Well, Andy, let me jump in here real quick. Trevor, you have been called a modern-day Paul Revere for the information that you are exposing. And I want to share – I got a question, but I want to share with the listeners a little bit about you, some quotes about you. One of the quotes I came across that really intrigued me was, "This New Zealander from the other side of the world understands better than most Americans the intrinsic threat posed by America's left." Trevor's new book exposes like none other to date the enemies within our own political infrastructure and offers numerous examples of how they've shaped public policy. Another one which I really thought was very interesting was about you was long before Barack Obama was on most Americans' political radar, Loudon was single-handedly scooping American media all the way from New Zealand, warning about the radicalism of a man who had become the USA's first Marxist president. Trevor, can you go in a little deeper and so that our listeners really understand how dangerous the radical leftist progressive movement in our country, in the United States, how dangerous that movement really is?
Well, I'll give you the three key areas. One is Obamacare, which is going to lock up a sixth to a quarter of your economy under state control and put everybody's health care in government hands. This is nothing to do with health care. It's about power. And that was developed 100% by Democratic Socialists of America, a Marxist group, and I prove that in my book. You know, Obama was personally indoctrinated by Quentin Young, a member of the DSA, a former member of the Communist Party. Obama's personal physician in Chicago who indoctrinated Obama into socialized health care. The other big thing is the destruction of your military. That is a key part of the Obama administration. If you look at what he's cutting your Navy back to pre-World War II levels, he's driving, purging officers out of your Army and Navy right, left, and center. He's driving good officers out with a gay policy and women in combat. He's cutting whole weapons programs. He wants to cut your nuclear arsenal to 265 nukes and then down to zero when the Russians alone have more than 6,000 that we know about. And you've got China building a blue water navy in the Pacific. You've got Russia trying to take over the Ukraine, then Europe. You've got Iraq trying to dominate the Middle East. You've got Iraq and Syria dissolving into chaos and a possible new terror caliphate there. Most of Asia, most of Africa is controlled by the Chinese. Most of Latin America is communist. The world economy is on the brink of collapse. And Obama thinks this is the time to cut your military. This is putting America's survival at stake. This is putting the whole Western world at stake. It's as dangerous as you can get. The third thing I'll talk about is immigration reform or amnesty. That is completely Marxist program, 100%, and I can prove it in my book. That what they want to do is legalize 11, 12, 20 million illegal immigrants. They know that 80 can give them citizenship and voting rights. They know that 80% of those will vote Democrat. That will give them at least 8 or 10 more million Democratic Party votes. The last election was decided by 2 million votes. They figure that will give them a Democratic Party majority forever, a one-party state. That is what illegal immigration amnesty is all about. It's exactly what it's about, a Marxist program to turn your country into a one-party state controlled by the Marxists and the unions. Do you think the Democrats are arrogant now? You imagine what they'd be like with 8 million more votes in their pockets and the Republicans permanently out of office. You imagine what this country could become.
I have a question as well. I'm just reading the jacket of your book here, Barack Obama and the Enemies Within. Reading the description of the book, how it starts out, a history about those who advise, mentor, and operate behind the throne of the 44th President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. Well, I put the Hussein in there myself. Trevor, do you really think that he would be a threat in 2016 when it comes to the federal elections, and that he might do something that would ensure that he continues to sit on the throne, because that's how he's treating it?
Well, I think he probably wants to line himself up to lead to the United Nations or something like that, to be the world's first communist president. I think Elizabeth Warren will be the candidate for the Democrats in 2016, and she is being chosen by the same people backed Obama. I may be wrong on that, but that's my gut feeling. So, no, I think Obama will go out of office, but he'll leave the country in such a chaotic mess. He'll destroy your military. He'll swamp your country with illegal aliens. He'll wreck your economy. He'll socialize your health care and do everything he can to make this country basically into a socialist dictatorship, to hand that on to Elizabeth Warren, whoever gets the title. Obama's basically a figurehead. You know, I think Valerie Jarrett's more powerful than Obama. You know, I think she's his handler. But you've got to, what the
totally
book states
agreed.
Is the Democratic
yeah, totally
Party is
that.
Now, well, the Democratic Party is now a socialist party. They've been taken over by the Marxists and the unions, and if they gain power, they will not give it up, ever. It'll be a one-party state in this country. So it's not just Obama. He's just the tip of the iceberg.
No, Trevor, I had my Tea Party meeting last night, and there is a gentleman running against Lindsey Graham who has the ability possibly to unseat him. He happens to be running on an independent ticket. His name is Thomas Ravenel, and he's got a lot of political gravitas here in South Carolina. His only downfall is that he had got arrested for cocaine. You know, he did his 10 months in jail, and he wasn't selling, he wasn't dealing, it was personal recreation. But he comes across as an extremely strong, strong conservative, and when he came into the room, the elephant, God bless you, the elephant he addressed right away. You know, he said, all right, this is what happens. But then he made a comment, and he said, do you know, if what I did in my personal life is enough to not elect me, then please explain your last three presidents. And you think about it, and he's absolutely correct. You know, you got Clinton that didn't inhale. You got Obama who admitted, you know, outright use. And then we've got some questionable backgrounds on George Bush. Those last three presidents would never have been elected had you taken something like this, a personal issue, instead of looking at the actual political record. And then he said something else that really struck me. Because you look at all the elections that are going across the United States, every single candidate that's being backed by conservative groups or Tea Party groups, they're being attacked. And you have Republicans crossing over to endorse Democrats. So I'm saying that it's not just the Democratic Party that's been infiltrated. It's our own Republican Party. And they're afraid that we just may kick them out and fine them, kick them out of the party, send them back over to the Democrats and reclaim our party.
I think that's 100% right. But the Republicans, see, Ann Coulter said it very well. There are plenty of bad Republicans. Now there are no good Democrats. You know, the Republican Party is the third progressives and rhinos, third go-alongs to get-alongs, and a third patriots and constitutionalists. If a third of the patriots and constitutionalists can become the dominant faction, they can give you a new Reagan. They can give you a real conservative government. They can restore your constitution. They can turn America around. If the rhinos and the go-alongs to get-alongs win, it's just about as bad as electing the Democrats. The demise will be a little bit slower, but it will be just as certain. Really, the battle for freedom is the battle for who wins in the Republican Party. Is it the Conservatives and the Patriots, or is it the Rhinos and the Boehners and the Karl Roves? That's what I'm talking to the Tea Parties about.
Well, actually, I think you can also shoo in the independents, because there's a lot of Republicans and Conservatives that are actually backing off the Republican ticket because of the Rhino tag and are running on an independent ticket. So I think there's going to be a huge upset with independents coming in. So
that could well be right. But what I'm saying is that there's one more chance to save this country, really. It's, well, 2014 and 2016. Because if the Democrats win after that, they will legalize all the illegal immigrants, and they'll have a permanent majority forever. The question is, if the Republicans are allowed to run a JEB, Common Core, Illegal Immigration is an Act of Love Bush, the base will fracture, and the Republicans will almost certainly lose, and even if they fluke a win, it's still a progressive running things. But if you get a leader, if the grassroots prevail and gives you a candidate like the grassroots prevailed in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, they can give you a Ted Cruz or someone of that caliber, things could be very, very different. So that's the battle that's going on right now. Do the Rhinos win and give you their Houston candidate, or do the grassroots win and give you a candidate who you can rally around and be inspired by?
Well, we're going to cross our fingers. And I know you got to be leaving in just a few minutes, but where are you going to be going? You're in Washington State now. What's your schedule like for the rest of the week?
Well, people can go to my blog, travelin.com, and see where I'm going. But I'm in Washington State for a week. Then I'm back in Oregon, Eastern Oregon, for a week. Then I go to Kansas and Missouri. I'll be in Florida for a short time, in the Orlando area. I'll be in Massachusetts, New York, New Hampshire, possibly Connecticut. I'll also be in Southern California, Nevada probably, and Colorado. So I'm doing a lot of states. So people can look at my blog and see where my events will be. I'm here till November 4th, so quite a while.
Are you going to be coming through South Carolina?
Not this time, not that I'm aware of, but you never know. There's still a few dates to be filled in yet, so you never know where I could turn up.
Well, you and I have to still have that drink together we promised each other.
We do. More than one, probably two.
I mean, come on, I've known you for quite a few years.
Yeah, and Yanni can have a few of this too.
Oh, we really do have to include him, huh? Oh, shucks.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you have a great day, Trevor, and you know, keep in touch. Let me know what's going on. You know my phone number. We were just a phone call away.
Yeah. Can I just add that people want to get my books, they can go to pacificfreedomfoundation.org. So Pacific Freedom Foundation, buy my books online there, or watch my blog, trevorlowden.com, and the crowdsourcing starts in September.
Right.
We'll
I want to remind.
We'll be in touch, Ann.
Okay, great. I want to remind people, if they go to pacificfreedom.org, 100% of the money that goes in there goes into a charity. So that's Trevor's charity there. So, Trevor, we wish you good luck, and I'll be talking with you.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Ann. Always great to be on, and catch you and the crew later.
Okay, fantastic.
Thank you, Trevor.
Bye-bye,
guys. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. And if anyone's hearing static here on the line, Blog Talk Radio is taking a look at it, and hopefully we'll get it cleared up because it seems to be coming through on everyone's line. So I do apologize for that, but technical difficulties do happen, and we just seem to work through it. And she's not hearing static, and she will stand and listen. Okay, great. Now, there's so much that's been going on, and you know what's really funny, guys, is that we still have the Yazidis being massacred over in Iraq. The Christians are being slaughtered in the streets. And yet everyone is now concentrating on Ferguson, Missouri, and no one's talking about what's going on over there.
Well, you know, Annie, this is, you know, this is kind of what has happened. You know, the news media has really refocused on what is happening here in our own country, and it's because of it, and I see this, a lot of what we're seeing taking place on the streets of Ferguson right now is a lot of what we've seen take place over in the Middle East, the onset of such things. You know, you start with the rioting, you start with the looting, and then you see what it manifests into after a radical Islamic group such as ISIS gets involved in this and starts doing that. So I think that's why a lot of people have started focusing on that. Plus, you also have the drive-by media really playing up the race card in this situation. The drive-by media has already tried and convicted Darren Wilson for shooting Michael Brown in this case. So, you know, you have all these elements at play. Of course, know that, you know, and you have, and of course, all of the race baiters are now on the scene. All the professional race baiters are on the scene, from Al Sharpton to Jesse Jackson. And to be honest, folks, they're looking to make a buck off of this, nothing more. And then, of course, you have the Black Panthers are on the ground there. And I personally think they are the ones behind a lot of the violence and the looting. And I am one, we're seeing a lot of reports of the folks that are doing the majority of the rioting of the and the looting are not actually from Ferguson. They are from out of state. We had a story that broke this morning that a lot of the rioters and looters have come in from Illinois, have come in from Texas, et cetera. So you have there's a lot of stuff that's being behind the scenes that is really flaming fire underneath all of this.
I'd like to add to that, too, is that Barack Hussein Obama, he was so eager to speak out about the death of this Michael Brown. But one thing that is getting buried in the press is that we lost Major General Harold J. Green in Afghanistan this week, and Barack Hussein Obama couldn't even bring it upon himself to attend the funeral. This was a high-ranking official. He is the commander-in-chief, but instead he went golfing, and he spoke out about the Michael Brown case. I'm very, very vexed with this person sitting in the White House.
I would be very vexed, too. You know, he's got what's his face? Holder going down there. And why? Why? I don't understand that. I'm just trying to tell Dan a message here. It seems like the static is coming up on Dan's end. So we'll see what's going on there. And hopefully we'll get Dan back on there. So pardon me if I'm thinking and doing two different things at the same time. But you notice the SEIU has been out there. I saw a video, and here all these people, they were out there protesting. And they're union people. And it's obvious these guys have connections to unions, SEIU and so forth. And the next thing you know, you see Black Panthers in there, the Black Power symbol. The agitators are coming in, and they're the ones that are causing all the problems. You had ordinary citizens going out there and calling for calm and picking up the litter and everything in the street. They're saying, this is our home. These are our streets. And they're going out there and cleaning the streets as a group of Tea Party people would do. You know, it's not the locals. It is not the locals. It's the people that are coming in from the outside. So if they just turn around and tell Sharpton to shut up and go home, and if they tell these agitators, you start agitating, we have no problem. You will spend the night in jail, and you will go before a magistrate the next morning, and you may find yourself for the next 5 years in jail for promoting a public riot, for attacking a police officer, for destroying a business. And I'm telling you, this is not looting. This is robbery. They're going in there strong-arming. It is not shoplifting they're doing. And I'm sorry, Al Sharpton, when that kid, not even a kid, at the age of 18, he is a man. That man.
Have you seen the size of him as well? I mean, this guy, he was huge.
Against the store owner. That man strong-armed the store owner. And I'm sorry, as a police officer, I will tell you, if he had walked in and quietly pocketed something and walked out and never interacted with that store owner outside of saying, good morning, good afternoon, goodbye, If he never touched the store owner, that is shoplifting. If the store owner sees him shoplifting and sees him run out, it is still shoplifting. The moment he placed his hand on the store owner, it elevated it from what may have been a summons, a desk summons, or a misdemeanor that may be dismissed to like a petty violation. He elevated it up to a felony. He committed robbery. Robbery by force. That is
what really... What really distressed me as well is that they put a curfew on the city, and that didn't work. So the police came out, and I see as a weakness, and said, okay, if you're going to have your rallies, at least do it during the day. Like, what?
Yes, absolutely. And we got to say that Dan is back with us, and we want to personally thank the Blog Talk Radio. Amy was working diligently in the background, and she seemed to have
cleared
up.
Amy is awesome.
Yes, that she is.
Yes.
So welcome back, Dan. So, yes.
Yes,
welcome
Amy
back,
is really good, by the way, when she's finally sat. Here's the thing. I could not hear any static at all on my end, and Amy comes on and says she can hear the static coming from mine, and so I called back in and adjusted everything a little bit. So hopefully you can hear me loud and clear now.
Yep, we can hear you loud
clear
and clear.
Clear as a bell.
Yeah.
Well, let me jump in on the conversation real quick here. You know, getting back into Ferguson. You know, we're talking about all of this stuff. This just to kind of flame the conversation a little bit more. You know, I wrote a story yesterday on Pundit Press about how liberal organizers have, get this, they've actually set up a voter registration booth at the very site where Michael Brown was shot and killed. They are registering voters at the site where Michael Brown was shot and killed in Ferguson. So you talk about bringing race into this and trying to play off the race card in here. Here's a prime example of where they're using the race card, trying to sign up voters and possibly incite, you know, more violence and looting.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, we've got Sue from New Mexico. She just raised her hand and wanted to join us. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Hi. Good afternoon. You know, Dan, you hit
on
exactly what I was thinking. I've totally quit tweeting anything about Ferguson because it's taking a nasty turn, and unfortunately, even some on the right are adding into it. But if you look at things, Obama and the Democrats look for opportunities, and they never let one go by. Just before this thing in Ferguson, you had the blacks irate about all the immigrants, these gangbangers and stuff, going into their cities where the government wasn't helping the U.S. citizens, the black kids. And that was what was dominating in the black community. They set back. They waited for the right opportunity. Now they are on this, and the media is falling into step. And the fact that they're registering voters, they were worried in November. And I don't know how much this has hurt, but that's what they were doing. You know, the blacks were turning away from Obama, the Democrats, all of the program. Now they're using this tragedy to get them all back in. And I don't know how, you know, to turn it around. Also, I don't know if people know, but the Black Panther Party has a BTR show. It was gone for a while.
Right.
It's back. And if you have ever listened, let me tell you, I don't know why BTR doesn't censor them. They openly talk about killing crackers' babies. It is absolutely frightening what they are saying on BTR. And BTR will not hesitate, and I hope BTR is listening, to censor or to come down on a conservative show that is telling the truth. But they let the Black Panthers get on there and promote killing crackers. And for anybody who doesn't know, a cracker is a white person. Anyway, that's my rant. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're right on, Sue.
Sue, Do you know what the name is of that show that's over there with the Black Panthers?
It's Black Panther Radio.
Oh, the Blake.
You can find it. I believe it's on Wednesday. It's only on, I can't be sure, but it's only on one time a week. You've got to go into politics, and that's where I found it like 2 weeks ago, that just go and scroll slowly through politics. You will recognize the AI, like, things you guys use. It is a silhouette of the guy who's leading the Black Panthers now. But I believe it's under Black Panther Radio. Yeah.
Wow. The guy's name, I thought it was his first name. His last name is Malik, I believe. Malik Shabazz. Malik Shabazz, that's who it is. Okay, I knew I'd catch on to it.
Yeah.
But they were on a while back, and then they disappeared. But they're back again. So,
you know, if we were to take the spotlight off of Ferguson, if we were to pull all the media out of there, do you know that place would be resolved in less than 24 hours? I would guarantee within 8 hours, calm would be completely restored because the agitators are gone and the people would be able to take their neighborhoods back and work in conjunction. Because you notice when they had that one black state trooper that came in and calmed everyone down, and the more he calmed people down, the more agitators moved in to undo all the good work he was doing. You know, there are a lot of good cops out there that are willing to work with the community. Now, I can't say Ferguson Police Department did everything 100% right. Sending in stormtroopers was not a good idea. You know, sending in community police officers to sit down and do community meetings with the people there, explain to them the process that was going on, let them become, you know, involved or whatever in helping to keep the situation calm. And you arm them with information. They can go out to their neighbors, to their churches, to their community meetings and explain, all right, this is what the police are doing. This is the steps that are going to be taken. Everything's going to be done legally. There probably will be a grand jury to determine, you know, what has gone on with the evidence. It'll be all out there in the open. But once they went in with the stormtroopers, you know, you don't hit them over the head with the club before they need it. And then the idiots that went and looted, they've got photographs of these people. All you have to do, I'm sure if you sat down and ran it through, you know, the mugshot, and it's now all automated on the computer with face recognition, you would probably have at least a good 50 or 60 of them arrested overnight. And you start arresting those looters, and I'm sorry, the rest of them are going to start backing down because they're not going to want to spend a night in jail. I mean, I was watching one store they go into, and they're coming out with these rims that cost more than my car cost. And I drive a Ford Expedition. I bet it's not a new one.
Well,
it's a used car.
Yeah. You know, Annie, this goes back to what I was talking about earlier is, you know, you have to really stop and think how much of the black community that actually lives in Ferguson is taking part in the destruction of their own community, or how much of this destruction and looting is being done from people that are coming from outside sources, whether they're being bust in by the Black Panthers, whether they're coming in from St. Louis, from Texas, or whatever. You know, if you look at a lot of the scenes of the people that the news media that is embedding themselves in, you know, they look like gang bangers straight from Los Angeles or straight from St. Louis or something like that. Wouldn't be something you would typically see in a small town such as Ferguson. So you really have to stop and think, you know, is the new Black Panthers, are they, and I personally think, they are the main group behind all of this that is inciting a lot of the violence, a lot of the attacks against the police. You know, we have reports last night from the rioting. You know, you had over 30 people arrested. You had 2 people shot during the rioting. But guess what? These folks were not shot by the police. They were shot by their fellow protesters. So you've got violence within the protest taking place amongst the protesters now. So you've got some elements that are banging heads inside the protest movement there. So it's just a situation you know, that just keeps getting worse and worse every single night. And, of course, last night, you know, they came up with the bright idea, said, you know what, let's do away with the curfew. Certainly that'll make things better. Well, last night was the worst night of violence that we've seen yet. And so, you know, the police and the state, you know, they're kind of in a catch-2 situation here. You know, they have to respond and have to quell the violence, but on the same token, they also have to show restraint so that they don't incite more violence and really let this thing get out of hand, where we're all of a sudden we're seeing the entire town being burned down, like we saw during the Watts riots, like we saw after the Rodney King verdict, etc. And so they're trying to have a balance here, but once again, we've got the elements from outside of Ferguson that continue to fan the flames. You know, people that don't think that race baiting is a profitable business, you know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are two of the biggest race baiting profiteers out there, and if they can make a buck off of the death of Michael Brown, they're going to do it. And then you have like the new Black Panthers that they're looking to become a more powerful voice. And so what's a great way to do that? To incite violence. And then all of a sudden you see, like we saw in a news conference over the past weekend, where the new Black Panther leader, Sabalas, actually took over the news conference saying, hey, I am the one that is here. I'm the one that's out there trying to calm this down. I'm the one trying to make peace, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, in reality, he's probably the one in the background giving the orders to incite and inflame all of this.
Absolutely. Oh, Dan, and that was going to be my question to you, is that Al Sharpton getting his nose in there once again. He is trying to call for love and peace and, you know, kumbaya and all that. But I don't know if this particular case in Ferguson, Missouri, actually has any weight for him, because he's not making very much money for it.
All right, we got to
where he makes his money though is the donations to his foundations. You know, that he actually makes a living off of.
Dan, we got to take a 1 minute break. Hang on just a second. We'll come right back in 1 minute, 5 seconds. Here we go.
Southern Sense is now being sponsored by Audible Books. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of these online books. You know, I don't like, you know, having to download them and sit in front of a computer or my smartphone or something and read. But I checked out Audible, and I was amazed. If you go to audibletrials.com/Southern Sense, you get a 30-day free trial. Now, I tried it out, and I wanted, because you get a free book if you download, and I decided, what book am I going to download? So I thought, what do I not have time to read that I can listen to and be enriched? And I downloaded the Federalist Papers. Now, this is a 3-volume, 9 hours of recording, $30-some-odd value I got for free. So check out audibletrial.com/Southern Sense and download your own free book.
All right, we're back with Southern Sense. Now, Dan, you just put up in the chat room that the governor is a Democrat. The governor did something that really blew my mind. He turned around and he criticized the police officers, the police department, for releasing that video of the strong-armed robbery. Number two, he has now sidelined the Ferguson Police Department 100%. He's taken them completely out of the equation in calming the situation. Now, who else but the Ferguson Police Department would know what the local community needs, who is part of the local community, and who is not? And yet, they've taken that completely out. Now, we bring in the Black Panthers, who do not like Christians, believe it or not. They're closely aligned to the Nation of Islam. And now we also have what's going on in the Middle East, and all of a sudden now the murder of the Yazidis, the murder of the Christian Kurds and everything else that's going on there is no longer front-page news, Ferguson's front-page news. So to hell with the Christians, and let's start a race war here in the United States. That's what I'm seeing.
And Annie, we can actually tie the two together now. because we have had reports and we have had photographs now within the protesters of people carrying ISIS banners. There's also been a ISIS flag has been seen within the protesters. And so now, not only, I know that this story has really, kind of taking precedence over what's happening in Iraq right now, but we're actually starting to see coming back to the story with Iraq, ISIS has made no secret that they would love to come to the United States and have a very profound effect here. They would like to do some serious damage here, and so we're starting to see the pictures, popping up on social media, of ISIS members in front of the White House, flashing the ISIS symbol on their phone in front of it. And so now we have reports of ISIS potentially being, embedded in with the protesters, quote-unquote protesters. Let's call them what they really are. They're looters, they're thugs, and they're thieves, and potential attempted murderers by shooting other protesters within their ranks. But now you possibly have a very serious a movement that is more radical than we have ever seen. When you have, ISIS is an organization that Al-Qaeda doesn't want to have anything to do with. Hamas doesn't want to have anything to do with. Hezbollah doesn't want to have anything to do with it, because these radical Islamists think that ISIS are even more radical than them and are completely nuts, and they're exactly right. So now it looks like we're starting to see some of those elements popping up, in the riots in Ferguson, which could add a whole new dimension to this. And going back to Governor Nixon, you have to remember, when Governor Nixon first came out and criticized the Ferguson police, he was criticizing them for their heavy-handed approach in dealing with the protesters, saying that they were using too much police force to try to quiet down the protesters. But yet, in the end, we see that now he's had to back off of that and call in the National Guard. He had to flip-flop on that. So there's so many things at play here that makes this situation a lot more than a black man that was shot by a white police officer.
Can we now say open southern border, illegal immigration, recent surge, Korans and prayer rugs found on the border on this latest wave? We know they've crossed over. How many of those members are the ones that are standing in front of Washington, D.C., the White House? How many of them have showed up in that neighborhood? Now, I had my Tea Party meeting last night, as I was saying, to a really packed, the whole restaurant was packed that we were in. And Thomas Ravenel did his speech, and he brought up a lot of the very same thing. How many of these terrorists are now here within our border, and how many of these people are now getting involved in these riots that are going to be seen? Because Ferguson is not going to be the first. Next one you're going to see is going to be somewhere in California, L.A. area. You're going to see something going on down in Louisiana and Texas, and you're going to see it then starting over in New York and Philadelphia and Clinton. And you're going to see these starting to spread. But Ferguson is the match that lit the fire. And it's all, I'm telling you, it goes straight back, as you pointed out, Dan, to what's going on in the Middle East. ISIS said, we can get away with this in the Middle East. The United States is not supporting Israel in their fight with the bombs being hurled into them. We've stepped back. We've given weapons to members of ISIS in Syria. We have helped the Muslim Brotherhood. We have helped the rebels that are connected with al-Shabaab and with Ansar al-Sharia. We've armed them. And so ISIS is saying, the United States is weak. They are weak. We can take them over and we can win. And Kel, you said, you gave a figure that, 5%, you're not going to see anything. When you get closer to 10%, they're going to agitate. And once they go above 10%, they've got your country. Well, now they're saying America's so weak, you don't even need 10% anymore. We've got
you don't,
Christians.
Because what they're doing is that they're engaging in the civilizational and stealth jihad. And Annie, what you brought up about the Korans and the prayer mats being found in the Arizona deserts, Texas deserts, whatever. One person for sure that can address that is Sue from New Mexico, because she's living this nightmare. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. They are going to swim over. They're going to intermingle with these so-called refugees that Obama is bringing in by the plane loads and the bus loads. This is just unbelievable. Your southern border, it's open season for anybody. The United States of America is a superpower, or so everybody thinks, but that status is going to be lost, and it's going to be lost via the voting blocks and everything else. The mere propagation rate that these people engage in, our two children compared to their six children, where are we going to be in 20 years?
Now, what makes this all worse is, Dan, what makes this all worse is you tie in all this that's going on, and now you have the IRS going into churches to listen to sermons to make sure conservative churches do not preach a political message. And in any sermon, any preacher, you can have someone interpret it as a political message, even though you may be and trying to count your word with the finest walking the razor blade. And every single one of these churches will be shut down. And they're going to shut down.
They have been monitoring the conservative churches, the Tea Party movement. They have been doing that for quite a while. It was finally brought to the table. Thank goodness that it was exposed as to what they were doing. They're targeting Christian conservatives. And Annie, yep, that's so true. And it just makes me ill.
What we're seeing in the Middle East now, we are literally seeing a genocide against Christians right now in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And not only
the
Middle East, in Europe and in Asia, et cetera, we are seeing an actual genocide where they're not even trying to convert them. They are flat out killing them. And what we're seeing in our country is what the beginning stages of that was. What started out as a war on Christianity, which we are seeing in our own country, we are seeing a war on Christianity. Call me a conspiracy theorist, call me Alex Jones if you want to, but we are seeing today a literal war on Christianity in our country today. And what started out as a war on Christianity in the Middle East and in Europe, in some parts of Europe, et cetera, has now turned into an actual genocide against Christians. And folks, if you don't think that could happen in our own country, you're sadly mistaken. Because if ISIS, if we do not secure these borders, if we do not secure that southern border, for starters, and these folks start trickling in, and they start getting in, and the radical movements start, you will start to see what is happening in the Middle East happening here if it gets hold, and you will eventually see a genocide against Christians in our own country.
Yeah, now tie that in, if you remember correctly, I believe it was about 2 years ago, a group of gay people were marching because of they weren't being allowed to marry in churches. They weren't being allowed to do all these things on Christian property. And the Islamic individuals group, I forget what the name of the group was, marched alongside them. Now, you know, in Islam, you know, being gay or lesbian is a death sentence. And yet here, this group of Muslims supported them in the march and marched alongside of them. That was, I believe, 2 years ago. It might have been Philadelphia. I may be wrong. And this moment I said that, I said, they're doing a false friendship. They're going to win their friendship over. And then as soon as they take over, they're going to be the first group that they go after and destroy after they've fought down the Christians. And this is started not just a couple of years ago. It started a long time ago. When they waited and they saw the atheists coming after the churches, like the atheists are now the IRS going in for the sermons. And Tim was looking for a link, and let me see. I'm trying to see. The Blaze had a really good article on this. Let me put this up in the chat room so that Tim can see it, and it's not copying. It is not copying.
That's okay. I put a link in there from the ACLJ organization in the chat room for everybody.
Okay, fantastic. But, you know, once the atheists started to go after the Christians, and the Christians were not fighting back, Then they said, oh, listen, we got a Chinook Nation. Now let's go and see who we can, you know, make friends with. Because now they're coming across the border being mixed in with the Latino. They're being trained by the Latinos in Honduras and Guatemala and Mexico to be able to pass as a Latino. They've already partnered with him. Once they come across and they take over the United States, oh, people, you have no idea the demon that you will unleash upon this nation.
And, Annie, that'll even go back. Let's tie this back to our previous guest with Trevor. You know, Trevor is very outspoken about, you know, the dangers to our country from within. Stop and think about this. Al Sharpton is fixing to be honored by CARE.
Oh, yes.
He's fixing to be honored. So you already have CARE is already in bed with the radical progressive movement that is taking place in our country right now. And so you've already got CARE involved with this. Can you imagine if all of a sudden you have members of high-ranking, you know, members of ISIS come into this country? We've already seen that the Obama administration is more than friendly, was more than friendly with the Muslim Brotherhood. And so all of a sudden you have ISIS here, who, by the way, Pope Francis, of all people, actually calling for an intervention, saying that this group has to be stopped. And that's something you won't hear from a pope, actually calling for a group saying that they are dangerous enough that they have to be stopped, they have to be eliminated. But if you were to have a group like ISIS to get a foothold in the United States, you know, with the progressive movement, just think about how even more dangerous that would be. They wouldn't even have to fire a shot here. They could just come in and take over, and then start imposing their radical forms of Sharia law to where if you have a woman that blinks the wrong way, they will stone her to death. If you have a young Islamic man that they don't deem as Islamic enough, that they will crucify these folks, behead them, crucify them, because they're not Islamic enough. That is the thing that sets ISIS apart from these other groups. They are so radical, so lunatic fringe, so dangerous that they're also killing Muslims that they don't consider Islamic enough. And so
they're killing children.
They're literally
beheading children in front of their parents. This is the Islamic State.
What about
You have a president that wants to play golf, go to the next fundraiser, go to the next, that he wants to enjoy, go out dancing or whatever, like he was doing in Martha's Vineyard. And then here in my home state of Texas, you have Rick Perry actually trying to do something. And if you think, and once again, call me a conspiracy theorist if you want. I tend to stay away from conspiracy theories as much as I can. But the timing of this indictment against Rick Perry is just a little bit. There's a little bit questionable about the timing of this, you know, right after we're putting National Guard troops on the border with Mexico. So that looks like in the group that's behind that indictment and behind that investigation, that indictment came down in a very liberal county by a very liberal grand jury. And so, you know, you're starting to see some of these elements take hold and some of the very people that are trying to do something about this being attacked.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when you were talking about the people being beheaded, don't forget the 300 children that were buried alive last week. Where do you see that on the front page? Where do you see anyone in mainstream media outside of Fox News or The Blaze carrying it? Or even you, Dan, Pundit Press? It's the underground news networks like yours that are only the ones getting the story out there. And you got to remember, that's how Fast and Furious was broken. You know, the online news.
I had to read it on Pundit Press. That's where I first heard about this atrocity. I read it on Pundit Press, and then I went to Bare Naked Islam and various other sites. We are the new media. we report the hard facts, the reality that the mainstream media is way too afraid to touch.
Well, you're right on. And our good friend Ken McClinton made this statement, and he actually is the one that launched this. And he declared a month ago on his show that the conservative media is now the mainstream media. And he is absolutely right. You know, my personal site, I have, you know, I'm not a big website. I'm not a small one. We have 7 million readers a month. But that gives us an audience and a voice to get the truth and get the correct information out there, you know, along with the Blaze, along with some of the other outlets out there, along with shows like mine, like yours, Kel, like Southern Sense, other shows still here on Pundit Press Radio. But we're the folks that are getting the truth and the information out there that the people need to know, and we need to continue after this. We have to keep after these stories so that the people know what's actually going on, because you are not going to see these stories in the liberal drive-by media. You're not going to see it. They're not going to report on this stuff.
No, not at all.
And they won't.
Tim is joining us here now. Tim, from across the pond, how are you today?
Well, good evening, Annie. I'm very well indeed, and good evening to everybody else on the show, and of course, good evening to Kel, my most favorite co-host in the entire world. I've been listening to...
Hi, Tim.
Hi, I've been
listening to... How are you doing?
I've been listening to the discussion with great interest, and I was really most interested to hear this about the IRS going into churches and monitoring sermons. That was a great surprise. I mean, on one level, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, that really is an infringement, really, of, well, I suppose it would be the First Amendment, wouldn't it, of, you know, to,
yes,
to be able to speak freely is obviously
it's
one of the cornerstones of a...
It's two infringements on the First... Because it's not only freedom of speech, it's freedom of religion, and both are held within the First Amendment. So it's violating the First Amendment on two levels.
Well, yeah, I see that. But of course, it does beg the question, well, if they think that they can do that without anybody raising an eyebrow, what is to stop them doing something a little bit more constructive and going into every mosque in the nation to listen for the same political message, which is going to be, without a doubt, given every Friday in every mosque up and down the country, because Islam is a political ideology and the message that it parts
exactly
is a political message. Well, you know, if they were to do something constructive like that, I'd have less of a problem with it. But I was really very surprised to hear this. It's the first I've heard of it, and hence my comment in the chat room.
Well, now, there is a couple of pastors that are out there now. There are a few pastors that are doing sermons on Sunday, free speech sermons, and they are actually daring the IRS. They have actually a couple of YouTubes out there. I forget what one of the pastor's names. I believe he might be in Louisiana or something like that. And he's got YouTube videos out there telling the IRS, come on, this is what I'm going to be preaching about on Sunday. Come on, take me, and I'll take you all the way up to the Supreme Court. They will not do that. They will walk away from him. They will go to a smaller, weaker church, and someone that doesn't have the guts and the intestinal fortitude to stand up to the IRS and boldly call them out, and they will take that person down and use them as an example. But sooner or later, they're going to step on the wrong person's toes, and they're going to have the courage to take them all the way up to the Supreme Court. And once we do that, the IRS loses all of their enforcement powers. Now it's open season on the IRS, and we're praying. We are praying they do it. We're saying, do it. Do it. And the first person you start to prosecute, we're going to get right behind them, and we're going after you, IRS. They're afraid.
Exactly. Hey, Tim, I have a question for you real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Why don't you kind of elaborate, because I want people here in the United States, the listeners on this show right now, to understand what would happen if radical Islam gets a hold in our country today, because you're seeing a lot of that in Europe and in particular England right now, a lot of radical Islamic movement taking place in England. Why don't you kind of describe what is taking place in England right now as far as Islam?
Yeah, certainly. We are certainly seeing a lot more activity from people who are described in the press over here as radical Islamists or extremists or a tiny minority of people who follow a peaceful religion. We have we are having it misrepresented in the press that these people are really some kind of fringe element that can safely be ignored because, you know, they're of no consequence. But what everybody is overlooking is that the ideology that is driving all this is the same everywhere in the world, and it's Islam through and through. And just because you may not be getting the full effect of Islam in the United States, it's only because there are not yet enough Muslims for that to happen. There's a survey that's been done that I frequently refer to when I'm on the radio, a survey done by a chap called Dr. Peter Hammond, who documents quite comprehensively how the percentage of Muslims in a population causes their behavior to change. So if there's only 1% of them, you might never notice them at all. They would just, well, I won't say blend in, but they would be seen as relatively a small but exotic population, you know, with great food and you'd celebrate their differences, and which is of course is what our political elites are asking us to do. But once they become 4-5% of the population, you definitely do notice some changes, and that's what we're seeing over here. They are becoming more aggressive. Even before the Israel-Gaza conflict, they were pushing for halal food to be served in public places, in schools and cafeterias, and you get halal food pushed on us in supermarkets without the labeling. I mean, halal is a big deal because the process of getting halal onto into a restaurant or into a supermarket involves a certification process which generates lots of money for the Muslim community. We're talking trillions of dollars every year worldwide through halal certification, a lot of which, of course, goes to fund terrorism. So that's why that's a big deal. But even leaving that aside, and even before the Israel-Gaza conflict, we were starting to see Muslims flexing their muscles all throughout Europe, praying in the streets, in public, blocking roads, generally making a nuisance of themselves and getting in your face at every opportunity. And of course, since the Israel-Gaza conflict started, we've started to see exactly how the anti-Semitism of the Muslim worldview comes to the forefront whenever Jews or Israelis are seen to defend themselves against Muslim aggression. And this is something that's quite frightening our political elites, and they don't really know what to do about it. But rest assured, it's definitely going to get worse in the United States as the Muslim population increases. And of course, because they tend to have more children than the rest of the population, their percentage will increase, and we will see, or you will see, the kinds of things that we're now seeing not only in the UK but in France and Holland and Scandinavia, where you're getting serious civil unrest on the streets. And it hardly takes anything to set Muslims off. A hair trigger event can cause Muslims to riot for days on end, and it will only get worse. And if you really want to see what will happen when Muslims feel that they're strong enough to mount a serious challenge to government, you only have to look at Iraq and Syria. People look at Iraq and Syria and say, oh, that's awful what these extremists are doing. But what's driving these extremists is the same Islam, the same theology that drives every devout Muslim throughout the world. Every devout Muslim has to follow the theology of Islam without question if he's going to consider himself to be a devout Muslim. And the ultimate result of that is what you're seeing in Iraq and Syria. The people who are running riot in ISIS, they're not just a bunch of criminals and hooligans, as our political elites tell us that they are. They are people who devoutly follow Islam. They don't just let anybody in. they have a very strong sense of what it means to be a devout Muslim, and they follow Islamic law to the letter. And all the things you're seeing happening over here, you will have coming to your towns and cities and streets when the jihad comes to your town, which it will. If Muslims are allowed to become much more populous than they currently are, it will come to your towns and cities and streets. And those friendly Muslims who smile at you when you walk down the street now, they will become your enemy and they will slaughter you, because that is what Muslims have historically done worldwide under similar circumstances. And you don't just have to look at what's happening in Iraq and Syria to see the truth of that. You look 100 years ago and you look at the Turkish Armenian genocide, and the pattern is exactly the same. Christians and Muslims lived in those areas 100 years ago, side by side as neighbors for generations. When the call came for jihad, Muslims didn't blink an eye. They took up every weapon they could find and slaughtered their Christian neighbors by the hundreds of thousands in a very, very short period of time. And that was 100 years ago. And even today, Turkey still denies that it had any responsibility for that. But, you know, what the hell? If they probably figure if they deny it long enough, we'll all forget about it. But what we're seeing now is a wake-up call in Iraq and Syria that is the logical extension of what you get if you allow Muslims to increase in population in Western countries without any kind of control, any kind of restraint. You will see it in America. We're starting, as I say, to see it in Europe, and it will get worse before it gets better, because our politicians are doing absolutely nothing about it except to tell us that Islam is a benign and tolerant religion of peace. And what is happening out there is nothing but the tiny minority of extremists, and we've got nothing to worry about. And that's what they'll be telling you, right up to the point where that Muslim's holding a knife to your throat.
Well, it's really funny, because the United States, the people of the United States and Canada to a large extent, we're unique. We have a point of view. We have a way of thinking that is not the same that Europeans or anyone else in the world have. We have a love of freedom. We do it. We are basically self-sufficient. Finding is the assault that started with the 1960s with Johnson and his great new project with welfare and food stamps and all of that.
Oh,
that dependency.
Yeah.
They're trying to force a dependency on us. And what they're finding is that we're pushing back, and that's why they're afraid of the conservative movement and the Tea Party movement, because we're pushing back to our original roots, what made us a strong people, our self-reliance, our independence, our fierce love of independence and freedom. And this is something that Europeans have had, I don't want to say bred out of them, but you've been so accustomed to this socialistic order for generations upon generations. We fled because we wanted to flee the bonds. And if you're trying to put the bonds back on us, you're going to find a huge, huge uprising where you're not going to have it in Europe, or you're not going to have it in the Muslim countries. They're so accustomed to being cowed. It's their way of life. But for us, now you're trying to stifle our way of life. And that's why we exist. That's why the Tea Party and the other conservatives are out there. We were quiet for so long. We were the silent majority. We got along to get along. But the moment you start stepping on our toes, we're stepping back. And I think that if the Islamic jihadists think they're going to try to subdue us real easily by subverting our government, we're coming back for them. We're not letting them take our guns. We're not letting them take our voice. We're not letting them take our freedoms. If it comes down to all-out war, we will stand, and they are going to find they're going to have one hell of a war in their hands.
And Annie really touches on something that's real important in our own country. And
Dan.
And it comes to the point.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Kel. You go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Annie, do you think it will come down to a civil war? Tim Burton, you know, my fabulous co-host, there is civil war on the horizon. Do you think, Annie and Dan, that civil war might be inevitable?
We may find some clashes, But I pray. I honestly pray it never comes to that. And what's ironic is a friend of mine, he does not want his name used. He wrote a book, and he published it secretly and sent me a copy. And he writes exactly about this subject, about Islamic extremists taking over the United States and how people secretly converted to Islam but secretly kept their Bibles, and what happened to American citizens, and how the uprising, the rebels, were the Christians hiding in the mountains. He wrote about it, and I asked him, do you really think this is going to happen? He goes, I'm praying it never does, but I wanted to paint a picture for everyone to see what their life would be like and how they would be living, how we are so modern. We have every single convenience at our fingertips, and we will be flung back centuries, and we will be back to the pony and the cart. And that's what they want to do to us. They want to send us back centuries. Can you imagine trying to get Paris Hilton into a burqa? That's not the America that they are aware of. Can you imagine telling someone like Michael Moore you cannot have that pulled pork sandwich supersized? Can you imagine these Hollywood elites being told, I'm sorry, you're showing too much skin. We don't mind you going to these Emmy Awards, but I'm sorry, that burqa is going to have to go over you, Barbara Streisand. You know, all these liberals who want to tout kumbaya and they're just a religion of peace. Well, wait until the shoe starts coming down on them. You know, everything's fine. They can have all those lovely mansions. And who's one school superintendent that was telling that rich people shouldn't exist, and yet they find out she has three homes, one of them in Hawaii. What the liberals say is good for the goose is not good for the gander. And yeah. We're not just the gander, we are the dander coming from the gander. But what we realize is that we've got that fighting spirit in us. We've got veterans coming back, and we discussed this on the last show, being told they cannot have free speech, being told that they cannot handle their own finances, being told they cannot have a firearm. I'm telling you, these veterans are going to take it just so far, and they're going to start fighting back. And all of a sudden, government's going to find a lot of people that they depend upon. They depend upon these military men and women to serve. They depend upon us paying our taxes. They depend upon us electing them into office. And when they find that we're not going to be the docile sheep, then they're going to find, honey, you've got nothing left to stand on. And the tables are starting to turn. And you're seeing it. You've got McDaniel still fighting for his seat. He's taking it to court. He's taking the ballots and having them challenged. God bless him. We need more people like McDaniels doing something like that. We need more conservatives like Ravenel coming out of the woodwork and challenging the Lindsey Grahams, exposing them for who they are. I had one old elderly gentleman come into the meeting last night, someone I've never seen before, but he traveled an hour just to come to the meeting with his wife or girlfriend, elderly couple, and he's wearing a Tea Party T-shirt. And he flat out says, I support Lindsey Graham. Everyone's head snapped over to me, and I just placed my hands on the table, and I said, sir, why do you, because he works together and he compromises everyone to get together. And I said, oh yeah, and what did that get us? And I started to enumerate the top offenses. And he's looking at me, and I said, sir, if you go onto our website, and I told him, viewforteaparty.webs.com, there is a petition sitting up there for the censure of Lindsey Graham, the South Carolina citizens for the censure of Lindsey Graham. I enumerate 35 violations he did, 35 times. He violated the Republican platform. He violated his oath of office. He violated the will of his constituents. And I said, I'm telling you, sir, go on there and take a look at it. And by the time Thomas Ravenel got done talking, I think this guy is now voting for Ravenel. We have to educate them.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, the Muslim Brotherhood going into Egypt and telling them that the Egyptian government to release the Muslim Brotherhood from the prisons and invite them into the government when they had been outlawed since 1929? Are you friggin' crazy?
And Annie, you're right on. And what, to kind of expand on what you're talking about is, you know, we as conservatives, this is a fight that we have to have now in our country. This is not a fight for our children. This is not a fight for our grandchildren to take on. This is a fight for us to take on now for the future of our country. Because what we have now is we have, and I use this term, radical progressivism is trying to take over our country right now. And, you know, conservatives have to stand up and we have to fight this. And you are starting to see that. You are starting to see more conservatives stand up and have their voices known. They're starting to stand up, you know, despite wanting to be called women haters, being called racist, et cetera. We're starting to stand up. And it's up to us now to take this fight on for the future of our country, to make sure that the likes of Elizabeth Warren, the likes of Bernie Sanders, you know, et cetera, do not get anywhere near the Oval Office, and we need to make sure that we, you know, that we get all of the rhinos out of office that we can, that we get all of the liberals / progressives, whatever they want to call themselves today. We've got to vote these folks out of office, and we've got to take control back of our country, back to the very founding principles that our forefathers meant for our country. We got to get back to the Constitution. Progressives believe that the Constitution should be completely done away with. They believe it's old-fashioned. It doesn't apply anymore. They believe that it needs to be completely rewritten. But that's not the case. The Constitution is the answer and the solution for our country today. And, folks, if we do not stop radical progressivism in our country today, you know, I don't think we're going to see a civil war in our country, but it will certainly let the more radical elements take hold, like the radical Islamic groups, whether it's ISIS or whatever. And in our own country, we could start to see some of the very attacks that are taking place in that started out as little attacks in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria. You can start seeing some of those very, you can start seeing terrorist attacks on a daily basis in our country again. And folks, you know, a lot of people don't understand that at one time that, you know, Baghdad was one of the most modern cities in the country. Afghanistan at one point was one of the most modern countries in the world.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
Look at what the radical Islamic movement has done to those countries. Look at what has happened. Libya was one of the most modern countries in the world. Look at what has happened to those countries. They have literally bombed them and turned them back to the Stone Age. And that is what these folks want.
Absolutely. Tim's going to have to leave in a split second. So, Tim, why don't you give a closing statement? And we want to thank you for joining us. Do you have a show on tonight with Kel?
Yes, indeed, we do. It's 11 p.m. British Summer Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Freedom Loving Infidels on the Radio Jihad Network. And I'm sure Kel will drop a link into the chat room. She's always got these links.
I will.
Okay. But yeah,
and,
I just want to say thank you very much for having me on. It's been an honor.
Tim? Always an honor to speak with you, and we're having open mic tonight, so hey, Annie, hey, Dan, if you would like to call in, feel free to do so. We're having open mic and various topics. It's going to be a very good one. I'll put a link in the chat room, and Tim, I will see you in a few hours.
Thank you very much, Kel.
Tim,
it was an honor.
We got to take a one-minute
thank
pause.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Annie.
Thank
speak
you
to you again very, very soon.
Okay.
Bye
great.
For now.
Bye. We're going to take a one-minute, five-second break, so I can try to earn some money. So please, people, take a look at Audible Books and audibletrials.com /Southern Sense. And I just had lost my commercial. And here it is. Here we go. While we take a very short break, let me tell you about our sponsor, Audible. Audible are books that you can download online, and you can sit back and don't have to read. You can hear it play in the background. I checked out the free trial, and the free trial you can check out is at audibletrial.com/Southern Sense. And the book I chose to download by free trial was The Federalist Papers. And I can't wait, because when I sit in my office and I'm working, I like something playing in the background. Normally it's, you know, listening to some other talk show or listening to some music. But this way, I can be enriched and have something. I don't have time to sit down and read hour after hour. I got over 9 hours of recording of over $30 value of the Federalist Papers as a free sample. Just trying out audibletrial.com/Southern Sense. Check them out. You'll be pleased. All right, and we're back. Now, Dan, you mentioned something about going back to the Constitution, and there was one thing I did last night, because I do have a box of Constitutions and Declarations of Independence, you know, little handout booklets in my closet here in the office, and I took a bunch of them. I took about maybe about, you know, 40 or 50 of them to the meeting last night, and I just threw bunches of them out on the tables. And I told them, listen, when you get into a conversation with someone and you're talking about the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, remember this. A majority of people today have never sat down and read them. I went to my physical therapist. I go to physical therapy 3 times a week. Yes, folks. And he and I were having a discussion. He says, you know, I used to have one of those little pocket ones, and I haven't had it in a long time. And, you know, I don't even remember what's in it. And I said, I'll take care of that. And I came in the next therapy session the next day, and I had like about 5 or 6 of them, and I handed them to him. And he said, wow. And he started talking. He goes, I don't remember all this stuff being in here. The assistant he's training had never read it. And do you know, the majority of people graduating law school have never, ever, ever read or discussed the Declaration of Independence or Constitution in getting their law degree. So I just turned around and I told them, hey, listen, you want to uphold the Constitution, you want to spread the word of the Republic, take a bunch of these and carry them with you. Leave them in the car. And when you get into discussion, grab one, hand it to the person, and tell them, hey, take this home and read it. And you'd be amazed how many people are happy that you gave them one. It's really fantastic. So we have to do that.
This is something that's – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If people can't afford to, you know, make a donation like $1 to the Heritage to get your free copy, contact your local congressman or senator. You call their office and tell them, hey, listen, can I get about, you know, 10 or 20 of these? And they'll say, yeah, come in. We've got them right here. You know, just pick them up. When I asked for them, it was for our very, very first Tea Party back in 2009. And we didn't know what type of a crowd to expect. So we said, all right, let's estimate 5,000. We had closer to about maybe 800 or 900. But we had a booth set up handing them out. Well, all the extras ended up at my house. So I ended up with about, you know, 4 cases of these things in my house. So since 2009, I've gotten rid of, I would say, 3¾ of them, just handing them out to people. So you can contact your local legislator, and they'll give them to you for free. You tell them, hey, listen, I want to take them over to a classroom, or I want to give it to my son and his friends, or you got an exchange student staying at your house. Hand them out. Don't be afraid. If they toss them, they toss them. But maybe they just may sit down and read it.
Exactly. I'm going to elaborate a little bit here. You know, going back to, you were talking about, you know, law students had never read the Constitution or Declaration of Independence graduating. We'll go back as far as high school, junior high school today. You know, our kids in our schools are not being taught, if they're being taught about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution at all, they're not being taught what those founding documents actually mean. You know, I homeschool my own children. I'm not a homeschool advocate. I'm a school choice advocate. Choose the best possible education for your children, whether it's public school, whether it's private school, whether it's homeschool. You know, homeschooling my children, I have the option to where I can really teach them what the founding documents of our country truly mean. But it comes back to parents. Folks, parents out there, you have got to take an active role in your child's education. Not only do you need to know what the Constitution and the Declaration truly mean, and what our founders, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that went into writing those documents and what they truly mean for our country, you need to learn about them, and then you need to make sure and take an active role in your children's education and make sure that your children understand what the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is all about, because that is everything that takes place in our country today are centered on those documents, on those founding documents. And so that is why they're so important. Everything that we are today goes back to those founding documents. And all of our children, they need to know, every man, woman, and child in this country needs to know the true meaning of those documents.
Yeah, now, if people go through the archives and they go back to the July 4th special I did this year, I go over what occurred going into the Revolutionary War, why we ended up with the Declaration of Independence and the Revolution. And every single thing that happened back then is happening now. Only 10 times more. It wasn't as bad back then as it is now, the overtaxation, the overburdening of government, and now government's intrusion into our very home. And you wake up in the morning and government has been intruding in your home. From the moment you get your low-flush toilet to your controlled stream on the shower to the control boxes that are now putting on your water line and your electrical. You know, government is now 24/7 in our lives. And we've got to wake up, folks. We've got to wake up, because if that little bit started the revolution in 1775,
yeah.
Imagine just how far we're going to get pushed. And maybe the enforcement of Sharia law on us, which they've already tried in several instances. There was a case in Florida, another case in New Jersey. They're already trying it in our courts.
You know what? This just leaves me breathless, Annie and Dan. This leaves me totally breathless. And you hit something right on the money there, and it's the government in our pockets. I am so sick and tired of big government. I'm a large C conservative here in Canada, and I like our principles in that we do engage in small government. We strive for small government. We try to keep the government out of our back pockets as much as we can. Annie, what you're just relating there just sent chills up my spine.
Yeah, well, people are not paying attention to what's going on around them. I was talking about the intrusion into the churches. They've already done it. They've done it now with campaign finance law. So in order to be a 501c3 or C4, you have to curtail your political speech. You have to be very narrowly defined. So now churches, in order to protect those tax-exempt statuses, cannot have political speech. They have a case that was in New Jersey, I believe now it's 2 years ago. A same-sex couple wanted to be married on church property. And the church says, we do not recognize same-sex marriages. It is against our faith. The gay couple sued, took them to court, and the New Jersey judge said they must be married. The church was forced to allow them to have that ceremony on their property. And the judge said it was social justice long overdue. And excuse my language, whoops it. That is a direct violation of our First Amendment rights. We have the right of... Oh, man, I'm getting... You can tell how upset I am.
I know.
They cannot prohibit the free expression of our religion. They cannot prohibit it. So if I say my religion says no to same-sex marriage, and if you want to have that same-sex union, it's called a civil union, because every single marriage is a civil union first before it becomes a marriage. Civil union is the legal recognition of couples, whether they are same-sex or opposite sex, and you need that civil union license before you can proceed to any religious establishment to have yourself married. You can find a church that will accept you. Then do not walk into mine and mandate mine. You do not need a law in any state, in any federal court, to recognize marriage. You only need it to recognize a civil union. And that civil union should then be up to the state to determine what it is defined as. And if we can, if I have been saying this for years, if we define the same, this argument of the LGBT community and say civil union, not marriage, civil union is a legal union. Now you can file your income taxes together. Now you have the right of inheritance. Now you have custody rights and rights of visitation in hospitals and whatever other family right you feel you are entitled to by a civil union. A legal document the government recognizes, but you don't have to force my faith to recognize it.
Yeah.
And Annie, I'll tell you this. You know, I'm with you 100% on civil unions. I was talking 10 years ago, if we had given made the legal definition of the civil union like this, we would not be having this argument today that we're having over gay marriage. Now, what is happening with the gay marriage debate is now spilling over into a religious debate, and now you're seeing this further. You're seeing this fight expanding to a lot more than just a fight over gay marriage. Now this is a fight over religion itself, another fight against Christianity in our country. You know, going against your, what is supposed to be your religious freedom in this country. And you're seeing this, it goes back once again to, you know, a lot of people will say that the war on Christianity, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory, it's just something made up. No, it's not, folks. This is something that we're seeing coming all the way down from the Oval Office, whether it's making little nuns buy contraceptive care, provide contraception, birth control to their members, all the way to, you know, now we're having the IRS come into the churches and watching what the preachers are saying and what they're preaching from the pulpit, you know, trying to attack their nonprofit status. And now you have, you know, even go further. You know, we've had lawsuits where, like Annie was talking about, where people have sued to be able to use a recreation hall on a church property that the church has opened up to the public in the past. But now you're going to see that even come even further to where now you're going to have, let's use it as an example, you're going to have, let's say you have a Baptist church, a traditional Baptist church. You have a gay couple that have gone to this Baptist church for many, many years, and all of a sudden they decide to come out. And so they come out and announce that they are a couple. Then they go to the pastor of that church and say, hey, we've been members of this church the majority of our lives. We have come out. Now we want to get married in this church. We want you to perform this marriage. That pastor is going to say no. That goes against everything that I have been taught in the Bible. It goes against the teachings of God. This goes against everything,
yeah,
I believe in, what our church stands for. So what's going to happen? That couple is going to turn around and they are going to sue the church. This is a little bit different than suing the church to use a facility that they've opened up to the public in the past. They're going to turn around and sue the church, sue that pastor, to try to force the gay marriage to be performed in the actual church setting itself, to actually,
Dan, it's
you know, force the issue with
now.
A religious thing.
It's happening.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Annie.
It's happening in my church right now.
Really?
Our church,
yeah,
has split. Our church had split from the Anglican Church of the United States,
right,
actually from the Anglican Church of South Carolina, because they wanted,
right,
to become more liberal in having gay marriage and so on and so forth. Ours being conservative.
Right.
And actually, ours being the oldest church in the state of South Carolina, actually the second oldest in the Anglican faith in all of the United States, going back to 1712. And
they're
trying to say that because we broke away from them, our property is theirs. However, we existed for a full, I think, something like 40 years or more before they were formed. So our property is ours. But yet, in order to force us back into the fold, in order to force us to say, all right, we have a choice, lose all this historic property, which includes the old Sheldon Church, as I said, you know, gone with the wind, the church that was burned, to lose all this, we either, you know, kowtow to them or we go into a lawsuit. And guess what? We went into a lawsuit. We said, no.
Good.
We have standing.
Good for
we
you.
Are not going to become a liberal organization. And there's a number of other churches that joined with us to try to maintain their properties. And this is happening now. The churches themselves are splitting. It just happened to the Presbyterians. The Presbyterians did the same
right.
thing. They said, you have become too liberal. We can no longer have it. You had a bunch of Presbyterian bishops out in California declare that Christ was not divine. Do you know the uproar that created across the rest of the United States? Churches are being split because the social program being pressed by the progressives has now infiltrated the churches.
Exactly.
And we have a fight, not only politically, we not only have a social fight, but we now have a most inner religious fight. So it's happening, folks, at a theater near you.
Yeah, and with the progressive movement, they go to the heart. The progressive movement where they really take hold is, let's face it, it's a fight for our country's very morality right now. And that is where the progressive movement really takes hold and really tries to get into the voters' minds is having to do with, you know, whether it be the war on women, where, you know, if you speak out against Barack Obama, you know, it's almost now, if you say Barack Obama's name, you're a racist, you know? The progressives are attacking the very morality of our country today.
Indeed.
You know, you're talking about the compass of morality. And guess what? I'm going to jump ahead here. At the end of the month, on the 29th, I don't know, you may know this name because the guy is from Texas, Reverend Keon Henderson is going to be joining us.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about exactly that. So I have him booked. I just confirmed that this afternoon. So he'll be joining us at the end of the month. You know, we got some really great people coming up. We've got Joe Kaufman next week, who's running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And that's one hell of a battle going out there. They're going
after
Joe.
Oh my gosh!
They're going
after
Joe.
Oh my gosh! I'm looking forward to that one. Oh, get that wicked woman from Florida out of there now!
I'd love to have you. Anyway, that's going to be followed by two brothers, you know, Thomas and Eric Miller, who did a commercial for him, and it's a hip hop commercial. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of hip-hop or rap or anything like that, but when I saw it, I said, oh, my God, that's fantastic. I was laughing my butt off. And I said, they get the idea. They get the message, which is going to be followed by Reverend Henderson. So, you know, we're going to be following up on this topic. It is a fight for the soul of America. And if you notice, a lot of the guests I have on, especially those that wrote books that were fictional, but based upon what they see the country going in, like Daniel Lyon, my mind just went blank. A lot of these guys that I've had on all have novels that follow. Todd Woods is another one. All have novels that follow that theme, you know, basically Christianity and fighting for the soul of America. And we've got to get that message out. That is the conservative message, I think.
You're 100% right. 100% right, Annie. It's you know, we as conservatives, it seems like we've been, here's a term, we've been too conservative in getting the message out. We've been too conservative in taking the fight to them. And so now it's time to where conservatives can be a little bit on the liberal side or the progressive side, if you want to use that term, in getting out the true conservative message. Because it's, you know, they're so, the very moral soul of our country is at stake here, folks, and we can't stress that enough. And we've always had a communication problem, especially in presidential elections and national elections. And now it's time to solve that problem and get out and communicate. Because let's face it, conservatives always have the best ideas, the best solutions for what is ailing our country today and to take our country into the future. But we've got to get out there. We've got to hit the streets, and we've got to take that message to the people. We've got to take it directly to them. You know, whether it's handing out literature, whether it's handing out copies of the Constitution, whether it's getting out on the, literally, I have at least once a day, it seems I have a debate in my local the convenience store down the street here while I'm getting something to drink, over something. But, you can't stress enough, folks. People will say, well, politics is not my thing. Why should I get involved? Well, here's the thing, folks. If you don't get involved, if you don't go to the voting booth and you actually cast a ballot, I don't want to hear you bitch and moan. I don't want to hear you complain. Because guess what? Everything that happens politically in this country affects your life in some way. So you have to be a part of the process to make sure that you're sending leaders, whether it's locally, whether it's to the state level, to the federal level, all the way to the White House, that represent the true values of this country. And folks, the progressive movement in this country is really a minority. It is a minority movement, but it is a very strong and very powerful movement because the conservative movement, because most people in this country will identify themselves as being conservative, but they have not taken an active role in such things just as simple as getting your butt off of the couch on a Tuesday or on a Saturday, depending if it's a national or electoral election, and getting down there and casting a ballot for the candidates. That's where it starts. It starts at home, educating your children. But, folks, you got to get it off your butt and go cast a vote. That's where it starts. And if that's your thing, that's fine. But at least participate and be part of it. And then there's more of us like us that, I'm in the media. But you know what? I make no point that I bring a message of conservative common sense to the airwaves when I'm on the air. And that's what I try to do. That is my thing. That's why I have a media network, to bring out the truth and the information to do all of this. But, folks, you got to do something about it. Just don't sit on your butt. Once again, whether you want to run for office or just go cast a ballot, talk to people or whatever, get off your butt and do something.
Amen to that. And that's what I've been saying. You don't even have to get out and have a discussion. If you see an editorial or something like that in the paper, or if you got riled up over something you saw in the news, write a letter to the editor. Pick up the phone, call your representative, call your senator, and say, hey, this is how I feel about this issue. I don't care what the issue is. I don't care what the issue is. It may even involve your local dog catcher. I don't care. You've got a telephone. It is right there next to you. Pick it up. And if you don't know the number, there's information, 411, or you can go online and click on the person's name and say, oh, gee, I can Skype them. It is that easy, folks. Send them an email. They all have links. They all have email links. Contact me. Look for that. It's not that hard. And you don't even have to leave the comfort of your chair. And if you don't feel like getting up to vote on that day of election, guess what, folks? The majority of the states now have absentee balloting. So you don't even have to get up off your fat arse. Just fill it out. Put it in the mailbox. Don't forget the stamp, folks. And mail it in. And you voted. Voila. I mean, how much easier do you want? Do you want us to pick you up personally, carry you into the booth and go, oh, little boy, push this button? No. No. Do something. Don't just sit there. Don't just bitch and complain. Do something about it. Oh, man, we completely missed the dedication to the show. And I'm so sorry. We got so involved in the conversation here, and I'm looking for my pad because I really did want to say something about this gentleman. Let me just pull it up real quick. Just bear with me as I get it. And the dedication is going out to an absolutely fantastic and wonderful man. His name is Jacqueline Harold Lucas. He died June 5th of 2008. This was a United States Marine who received the Medal of Honor for his heroic actions during Iwo Jima campaign. He unhesitantly hurled himself over his comrades upon one grenade and pulling a second under himself. One of the grenades exploded, and Lucas absorbed the entire blasting force with his own body. Private First Class Lucas was the youngest Marine ever to receive the United States Military Decoration. He was presented by Harry Truman on October 5th, 1945. Folks, he survived. He entered the Marine Corps at the age of 14. He lied. He then was shipped out after he qualified as a marksman and then as a heavy gunner. He actually left his base, and he was listed as AWOL, as a deserter, on January 29th, 1944. The reason why he left, he heard a ship was pulling out and going into combat. He snuck aboard the ship. A week later, he presented himself to the XO on February 8th of 1949, dressed in clean, neat dungarees. The unit he was being transported to was the 5th Marine Division. He had reached his 17th birthday at sea, 6 days before the heroic action at Iwo Jima. On this, he saw the grenade being hurled. He dived upon it, and there was lava, sand. He buried the one grenade in the sand. He grabbed the second one. It exploded. And at the time of his death, he had underwent 21 surgeries, 200 pieces of metal, some the size of 22 caliber bullets remained in his body, which set off airport detectors. He then further, after he was discharged from the Marine Corps in September of 1945, later on, in 1961, he joined the U.S. Army. He wanted to overcome his fear of heights, and he served in the 82nd Airborne Division and survived a training jump in which both of his parachutes did not open. This man should have been dead twice over, and he survived. So we dedicate this show to this brave hero of World War II, Jacqueline Harold Lucas, the youngest United States Marine to ever receive a Medal of Honor. We dedicate this song, My Name is America, to Dodd Allen Herndon, and we thank you for listening in. We say God bless to all of our brave men and women, and see us back here on Friday. Thank you.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds
is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.